couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new film Shirley, Becky, Judy and Punch, The Aerialist, and Blackout. I've got a new Fat Guy 5 for you, and I'm going to be talking about the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Creepshow Season 1 from Shudder. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Now, while there's some news going on about movie theaters reopening, like in Ohio, they just gave the go-ahead to reopen entertainment venues. Cinemark is saying they're not going to require patrons to wear a mask, and AMC is questioning whether they're going to be able to actually reopen again. But, you know, somebody like me who's in the media, somebody who has a voice, it's really hard to watch what's going on in the world today and not at least address it. And I want to address it appropriately. I mean, my God, the cities are burning. And be fair, vast majority of those protesters are peaceful, law-abiding citizens. And they may be angry, they may be shouting, but everything I've seen, it's teeny, teensy-weensy group that is causing any problems, including property damage. And sometimes there's even some suggestion that may not even be the actual protesters. It might be other groups coming in and causing all those problems, not to stir up any weird conspiracy theories. But I have to talk about this. This is the beginning of an apocalyptic movie where you have all the things showing up. Oh, and then riots in the streets and this is, feels like watching the news is like watching the clips at the beginning of an action movie for the summer. And it's kind of horrifying. You know, I've never been one to talk too much politics in this show. If you want to hear politics on the radio, you can find it anywhere. There's so much politics on the radio. You don't need my voice in there as well. But I do talk about movies, and as somebody who talks about movies, I think it's important to give that a perspective, because that's how many of us digest our information. And that can be bad, because you can be trained to think that things are going to be all nice and hunky-dory and figured out in the next 2 hours, but there's a lot you can learn from movies. And I think in wake of what's been happening this week, with the protests and the death of George Floyd and all the stuff that's surrounding it and that pent up rage and energy, we can dissect that and learn about it by watching some films. And so I'm going to give you a Fat Guy 5 of 5 movies that everyone should watch to have greater understanding. Not screaming your own opinion at somebody without understanding where they're coming from, but looking at the situation and dissecting it and figuring out why things happen for real and not just because of some knee-jerk opinion you have that may be wrong. So here's my Fat Guy 5 of 5 movies to watch in response to the protest. And I challenge all of you to watch these 5 movies before you start posting whatever you're going to post on Facebook. The first one is Do the Right Thing. This movie is 31 years old and is as relevant today, if not more so. In fact, Spike Lee did a short film, which was just a little bit of an edit, with Radio Raheem getting killed in Do the Right Things, and he intercuts it with the Eric Garner footage and the George Floyd footage. And it's terrifying when you look at that stuff cut together. How prescient Spike Lee was with this. Watch Do the Right Thing. And don't just watch it as saying, oh, Spike Lee's an angry young man and he's just venting about something. No, try to understand. Come to his side of the table. Figure it out. And I challenge anyone to watch it. Ask yourself, why does Mookie throw the trash can at the end? And if your response is, well, he's just a thug, that doesn't count. And that's okay if you can't figure it out because that's not your perspective of life. Read about it. There's been 30 years of people writing about Do the Right Thing. And find out why these riots can happen. Find out why a section of society, if they feel that they're being undermined or marginalized, why they react this way. And find out why Mookie throws a trash can. And when you can answer that, you'll have a greater understanding of everything that's going on. The next one in the Fat Guy 5 is Selma. Ava DuVernay's film about Martin Luther King, but it's really not about Martin Luther King's life. It's not a full biopic. It's about the Selma March. And the reason this is important is because everybody's referring to this now. And you see the meme where it says, this is what a peaceful protest looks like. Not realizing that that peaceful protest turned into a bloodbath. People were beaten. The Selma March did not end peacefully. And it wasn't Martin Luther King's fault. So that's an important one to watch because it'll give you perspective into what happened 50 years ago that still hasn't been completely rooted out of our system. Now let's move away from the racial aspect because the racial aspect, you can't divorce it from with what's going on now. You cannot divorce the racial problem going on with George Floyd and what happened to him. And you can't divorce that from the power structure of some police departments and the way things work. But they're not one and the same. So let's look at what's going on with just protests. The next film I suggest to watch is Suffragette. Now, I'll be the first one to say this is not a great film. This came out a couple of years ago. It was an award bait movie. It went nowhere. It's not even about the United States. It's about the women's suffrage movement in the UK. But the point of the movie shows people don't pay attention until something violent does happen. There's something that happens in this movie that is important and is the crux of why women in the UK got the right to vote. And that's how this stuff works. That's how it's always worked. Now, the next one, again, let's pull away from the racial element because I'm moving away from that completely and talk about the power structure of many police departments. There's a documentary out there I encourage everybody to go watch. It's called The 7-5. And it's about how the structure and the internal workings of a lot of police departments are designed to protect the police, even the bad ones. And you have bad apples that are then protected within the system. And The 7-5 really shows it. I mean, yeah, you can say, well, yeah, sure, watch Serpico. That's the well-known story. But look at The 7-5. It's about a police precinct in New York in the 80s and 90s. And there was this guy in there and he used the system to hide. And he worked with drug dealers and he was paid off. He made a lot of money. He made it a very dangerous environment for his fellow officers who were protecting him. And you had stings and busts that got blown up because of him. And the structure of the department still protected him. This wasn't even black or white. And if you're going to run out there yelling Blue Lives Matter, you should worry about this stuff because the power structure protects the bad guys sometimes. Now, the last one I want to talk about and suggest you watch, I've been talking about this movie for years. It's called Peace Officer. It's a documentary and it profiles this guy in a small town who was the first person to actually get a SWAT unit put in the small municipal police department. And yeah, I mean, if you want to talk about the militarization of the police and brutality and all that stuff, people are going to say something like Detroit. Go watch the movie Detroit. But again, watch this documentary because it has nothing to do with race, but it has everything to do with what's going on. And it talks about the dangers of militarizing the police. The police and the military are two totally different things. The police are there to serve and protect. The military is there to kill people and break things and defeat and crush the enemy. They have two very separate jobs. Just because they look the same doesn't mean they're the same. I mean, my God, my veterinarian looks like an anesthesiologist, but I don't want my veterinarian giving me anesthesia for heart surgery, and I certainly don't want my anesthesiologist neutering my dog. But if you dress people like the military, they're going to start acting like the military. You dress for the job you want. And if you show up at a protest with body armor and batons and pepper spray and shields and armed to the teeth with a tank behind you, you're going to get a riot. So the militarization of police is a problem, and not just in the urban black community. It's the problem everywhere. And that's why you should watch Peace Officer. The military and the police are two totally different things. And when you start giving them the same job, it is not good for the average American, black or white. Apologies for getting a little bit political, but I challenge anyone, watch these five films and then see if you don't react differently to things that are going on. I need to go to a break. When I come back in the next segment, I'm going to be talking about The Blackout, Invasion Earth, and The Aerialist. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews for this segment. Unfortunately, some of these movies are a little bit violent. I feel bad about that. I don't choose what movies are coming. It just so happens that these are the movies that are showing up. This is what you get in on-demand stuff in a lot of them. You get a lot of action movies. You get a lot of smaller, you know, sometimes thrillers and horror movies. So, yeah, you know, if you want rom-coms, now is not the week for that. But the first one I want to talk about is Blackout Invasion Earth. This Russian action movie follows what's left of the military fighting an alien invasion that turns the dead into zombie drones.
As we all know, something happened 24 days ago. And all contact was lost with most of the world. Everything outside of this circle is in complete darkness as of now.
We'll make anyone still alive in the quarantine zone attack us. There are 160 million of them.
People?
Not really.
The war has begun.
Like I said, this is a Russian movie, and it's dubbed. So if you go rent it, you're not going to get it in Russian or anything like that. The dubbing's, it's at the level of a Godzilla movie. The you know how the voices, not just they don't sync up, but they don't quite match the look of the person. They sound like it's the same person doing, you know, just slightly changing his or her voice for the different characters. So it is sort of cheesy. It is kind of corny from the filmmaking perspective. And it's available now on VOD. I think it actually comes out on DVD. It's one of those day and dates releases that's both on a disc where you can go rent or buy a physical copy, but you can also download or watch it on VOD. Well, first of all, it's interesting because it's a Russian film. And the reason that makes it interesting is because it has zero U.S. perspective. In fact, the U.S. is not, like, the story about it is about this signal that hits all of the world, except for this one area that's blocked out. I guess the signal was shielded, and so it hit this one area of Russia. But like 99.999% of the world got turned into basically, well, they get either killed. I could never figure out. They either get killed or they could become these drone zombies. And of course, Russia's on the other side of the planet. So of course, all of the United States and North America and South America, they're toast in this movie. So it's 100% epicentered in Russia, which gives it an interesting perspective because you're not watching American military here. You're watching the Russian military, and you get a real Russian perspective with this movie. You know, I just talked about in the previous segment, one of the things about, you know, the difference between military and police and the look of the military and why the military on your own soil can be kind of terrifying. But this is Russians, laying siege on areas of Russia. And so that has a weird meaning this week, watching this movie itself. It also shows the perspective of, and I guess this is a dumb American perspective in my thinking, oh, well, the Russians have no problem just mowing down the zombie drones. Oh, yeah, all these people are coming in. You know, you have this huge horde of people running at them. They have no problem just mowing everybody down with machine guns in this movie. Now, of course, there's zombies, and we've seen that in the zombie movies that are made stateside. But it brings in different meaning when you're thinking about what's going on in our own country and what happened years ago in Tiananmen Square and how other countries deal with this. And so the Russian perspective makes it really interesting. Now, the one reason I really wanted to spotlight this movie is it has, first of all, some really cool imagery and has some really good special effects for what is ostensibly a direct-to-video release here. And it has some really neat action moments. The characters are crap. They're not very good characters. They're sort of the macho versions that you'd see on a direct-to-video feed at some point. Like, the movie opens with one of the soldiers in his free time, and he meets this woman at a bar, and then they have this crazy sex scene, and then the invasion happens, and it turns out that she's a doctor working with the military, and they run into each other again. So it's not a very smartly written film from a character perspective, but it does have some interesting elements to it, because it has this sort of advanced wave of aliens, and there's a representative there, and he's, I think they give a really neat, creepy, strange perspective with him, and I really enjoyed that. I also like the overall story, what the aliens' purpose is in this, and what their end game is and what they're trying to do. I think this opens up a lot of great questions. It does exactly what science fiction or speculative fiction is supposed to do. It's supposed to open you up and say, oh, well, would people really react like that? Or what would you do in this situation? So all those speculative fiction and science fiction elements are there. It's just kind of this crap story about these crap characters that really aren't well fleshed out. But it has some really neat high concept stuff in it. So I'm going to have to say Blackout Invasion Earth kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about The Aerialist. I actually don't have a trailer for this one. I tried to get a trailer, but it's one of those trailers. It's an independent film, so there's like one trailer. And the entire trailer is words on a screen and music. There's no dialogue whatsoever. And that's fine for a trailer. It doesn't work at all on the radio. I mean, I could just do a 30-second musical interlude, or I could have done the voiceover in a world. But I wasn't going to do that. So there's no trailer for this one. But in this movie, it's a follow-up to a movie called The Gymnast, I think it was 10, 15 years ago. It's about an aging aerialist who fights insider politics of her troop as they plan their last show. This is, I believe, available on Amazon. I think it's going to Amazon. I don't know if you can get it elsewhere on VOD, but if you got an Amazon Prime account, you can watch it free of charge, or, you know, included in the charge. Part of the thing is The Gymnast, the original movie, I've never seen. But it did win awards because it has the Gymnast does, not this one for that matter, not much, but The Gymnast itself has a pretty strong LGBT storyline. So it got some notice at like out festivals and stuff like that, because it's about this aerialist and she falls in love with this woman who's also, I never saw the first one, but that's not the forefront of this story. I think they still have that element of her character in there, but it's more about her fighting against the new director who's got his own vision and he wants to do this. So, you know, she's fighting with him, and it's sort of creative differences and who gets to do what. So it's interpersonal stuff. If you've ever worked in any sort of troupe, whether it's a theater troupe or a dance troupe or anything like that, any sort of artistic troupe, you're going to get difference of an opinion. You're going to get people fighting with each other. You're going to have infighting. You're going to have the sort of the cattiness that goes on. And you have that here, and it's mildly interesting. Some of the characters are okay. I was not a big fan of who the characters were necessarily. I thought that they sort of dragged. And the other thing this movie does is especially when it gets to the end, and you see this a lot in independent films, the independent filmmakers don't like to do bad things to their characters. And so they like to have everybody be happy at the end. So it's trying to resolve this stuff and have it all kind of almost work out too perfectly, where everybody's kind of got this smug smile on their face because it all works out for them. And that to me is, I'm not looking for a George R.R. Martin thing where they're going to have a red wedding and kill everybody. I'm talking about just having realistic things happen. And things never happen perfectly and wrap up perfectly in your life. In this one, it does do that a little bit too much. But, you know, still, I mean, if you want to see this movie, if you're interested in any sort of dance troupe or aerialist or anything that involves that, or if you've worked in a dance troupe or in a ballet or something like that, you'll probably find something a little more interesting. But for me, I thought it was just too much of a throwaway story. So I'm going to have to say The Aerialist kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay. That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Shirley and Judy and Punch. To Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews. And let's talk about Shirley. Troubled author Shirley Jackson starts an inappropriate relationship with the wife of her husband's boarder.
To our suffering, my dear.
There's not enough scotch in the world for that.
Well, you were invited to stay here for a few days. Until we can find a place.
Shirley has these bouts.
She's gone sick in the head.
I read your story.
What are you doing in here?
It made me feel thrillingly horrible.
Do you know what it's like to have a secret?
If you don't know who Shirley Jackson is, and a lot of people may not, I mean, her name is less famous now than it was the 60s and the 70s, certainly in the 50s when she was writing. She was an author, and she wrote some more, you know, literary stuff, New Yorker type articles, and stories. She's what you would consider the literary author of the day. But she's best known, especially now, you know, 50 years, 60 years later, she's best known for writing The Haunting of Hill House. And if you are unfamiliar with the book she wrote, it was like in 1958 was when she published it. And Robert Wise, who directed Star Trek the Motion Picture and The Sound of Music, he adapted The Haunting of Hill House into the movie The Haunting in, I think, 1960. And it is a brilliantly done haunted house movie. It's one of the best haunted house movies you'll ever see. It's not there for effects, it's there for atmosphere. And it's a brilliantly made movie that is actually relatively close to the book. I read the book, but gosh, you know, I must have read that book 25 or 30 years ago. The Haunting was remade in the late 90s, and it was awful. Directed by Jan de Bond, had like Liam Neeson and Catherine Zeta-Jones and Owen Wilson in it. But Shirley Jackson was a seminal horror author of the mid-20th century, and she is claimed to be an influence on a lot of horror authors, in particular Stephen King. He's always referenced her work. And then, of course, The Haunting of Hill House was made into a Netflix series just, I think, last year or so. So it's prominent in pop culture, and it's one, like I said, one of the most famous horror books written. But this isn't about the book. It's not even about the writing of the book. This is more about the, I guess, disturbed mental state of Shirley Jackson. And, you know, she wasn't quite right in the head. And she ended up dying relatively early. I think she was in her late 40s when she died. She was not a well person. She was physically and mentally had issues. And that's what this shines a light on. And the story follows her. Shirley Jackson's husband was a professor. And so this other professor is brought into school, and the couple lives with Shirley Jackson and her husband for, you know, over the course of the year, as he's like either, I don't know whether, I don't know whether he's, they're trying him out. I don't know why he never ends up getting his own place. But it's the relationship between Shirley and this new guy's wife. And if you've read or even seen The Haunting, or if you've read The Haunting of Hill House, you'll know that there are certain lesbian overtones to that. And they make them far less subtle in the remake of The Haunting than they are in the original movie, The Haunting. Although they certainly are. For a movie that was made in 1960, it has some pretty heavy-duty lesbian overtones to it. And it deals with their relationship and their distrust of their husbands and the interpersonal dramas, as much as an interpersonal drama can be when you're kind of just stuck at home. I have always kind of looked askance at movies that are biopics of a famous author that purport to be more like their books than they really are. And I feel that's part of this. You look at the trailers for this and you're like, ooh, this is going to be creepy and weird. And it's just uncomfortable at times. The same thing happened with that Tolkien movie that they made. I think it was last year sometime. The one Nicholas Holt was in it and Lily Collins was in it. It was about Tolkien and his life at school and going into World War I. And sort of how he developed his own mythology, but it's not about the mythology. It's about a guy going to school and then going to war. So it's not about dragons and hobbits and elves, but they of course put that imagery in there because it's about him being inspired, but it's still the story of just a guy. And that's kind of the way Shirley is. And Elizabeth Moss plays Shirley, and she does a fine job, but she's getting a little overexposed now. I think we need to dial back on how many movies we're putting Elizabeth Moss in, or she's just going to end up becoming that flavor of the month and then just disappearing. She might have too many roles. I mean, she might turn into what Jude Law was around the turn of the century. And he just then, you know, by about 2006 or 2007, people are like, okay, I'm done with him. So anyways, I wasn't terribly impressed with Shirley, but I know some people are. It just wasn't my cup of tea. So I'm going to have to say Shirley kind of sucked.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Judy and Punch. A married team of puppeteers face violence within their own marriage.
A mainstay awaits us, my love.
You might wish to keep those magic tricks a little on the low down. Oh! Some folk in Seaside are prone to superstition.
Witches!
But I've come to report a crime.
My wife and child dead at the hands of these heathens.
Time is of the essence.
If I don't go back, he wins. He won't be winning anymore.
This is a bizarre little story that's meant to mirror the Punch and Judy characters, the marionette characters that are famous throughout Europe. Less known in America, but very, very famous throughout Europe. And it takes place in this English little town called Seaside that's nowhere near the sea. They make a point to say that at the beginning. But it's this tiny little English town, but they're, of course, riddled with superstition and worry. And this takes place, like, what, the early 1800s, maybe the 1700s. I don't know what time specifically. But around the time that Punch and Judy, the characters, were being developed, not in this place. It's not purporting to be autobiographical or even biographical about the characters. It's just an allegory of their roles. And in that sense, it has some real violent things happen in it. And sometimes the violence is very funny. Even though if you were to just look at it in one snapshot without the context around it, it's horrifying. And I think in that way, it's really kind of cool. It has this look as if it were produced and at least worked with the same crew that worked on the Terry Gilliam movies from the 90s and into the 2000s. It has that lavish look, but not a terribly cohesive look all the time. But it shows the superstition of the people, and it has some pretty good performances, in particular with Mia Wasikowska, who plays Judy, and her husband is named, played by Damon Harriman. He kind of channels a younger, less flamboyant Heath Ledger. That's part of the reason why I feel it felt very Terry Gilliam-ish, because Terry Gilliam used Heath Ledger a couple times. But it has a sardonic, humorous edge that works at times, but other times it has trouble following through. This is a movie that there are parts of it I really found fascinating. I mean, it looks great, has some great performances, has some very, you know, embarrassingly entertaining moments. You know, stuff you feel just horrible about laughing at. But it also struggles to stay grounded, but be weirdly absurd at times. That's a really hard balance to match. And even somebody like who was a master at that, like Terry Gilliam, he always struggled with something like that. I mean, you look at something like, you know, Brazil, or even The Adventures of Baron Munchausen, and he's able to do that in those movies. This one, not so much. This one, at times, gets a little too grounded. I think that's the biggest problem. And part of the problem is they do hinge on the character of Judy almost a little bit too much, where they should show the absurdity of everything rather than the grounded element. But it's still an entertaining enough movie. It's different. I will say that it is different. And for that, I'm going to have to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Becky and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Creepshow Season 1. Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up the movie reviews and talk about the movie Becky. Kevin James stars as a white supremacist cult leader who escapes from prison and terrorizes a family as he searches for something hidden in their home.
Jeff, this gentleman lost his dog.
Okay, well, why don't you give us your number?
Our dog is a Rottweiler. Purebred. That's why you never let them mate with other breeds. You get the worst of both.
Okay, I think it's time for you to go.
Stay calm. I'm looking for a key. You seen it?
No.
Well, that leaves little Becky. Where's Becky?
Wait!
He's gonna hold your dad still while I hurt him.
I'm not gonna let them get away with this.
First of all, before I even talk about the movie, I had a radio colleague this week. I was talking about the movie to him, and he said, oh, I saw the trailer, and I thought, oh, this guy looks like Kevin Carr. And I'm like, okay, I get it. It's Kevin James. He's a little bit tubby. He's got this big, bushy beard, and I've got a big, bushy beard now, partly because I was growing it out for a short film I was going to be working on. And, well, you know, then the quarantine happened, and it just gave me more of an opportunity to get a bigger, bushy beard for this role. And I shave my head. It is because I don't like hair on the top of my head. It's a fashion statement. It's not anything political. But I'm like, okay, I get where he looks like me, but he also has a giant swastika on the back of his head, and I do not. So, I mean, yeah, it is funny that you get that and go, oh, it looks like Kevin Carr, except for all the white supremacist stuff that's tattooed on his head. So, you know, just to point that out. And can I say, you know, I think it's good that they're making a point to have Nazis be bad guys in movies still. Nazis are the bad guys. I've talked about this at length. We didn't fight World War II for to be like, oh, the Nazis are okay. Or, yeah, let them come over here. They might have some good ideas. No! They're Nazis! And white supremacy can go kiss my butt too. That's nonsense. And so I think it's important. You're going to start seeing more and more of these movies, partly because you're seeing a rise of white supremacist movement and dog whistles. And so that's the way Hollywood reacts. And I applaud that because screw them. Screw the Nazis and screw the white supremacists and screw the KKK. All that crap can get, throw it in the dumpster fire that's 2020 and let's get it over with, okay? Because I'm sick of people even just like mildly defending Nazis. So I'm glad to see an anti-Nazi movie showing up. I'm glad to see an anti-white supremacist movie showing up. But it's not really the core issue. It's just that's the character. He's a bad guy in here. The story's about this home invasion and the little girl. Well, she's like 13. And in the backstory, she's 13 and her mother has just died of cancer recently. And her father, played by Joel McHale, is really kind of, I mean, as much as Kevin James is playing off type, playing this menacing bad guy, Joel McHale's off type playing this kind of really nice dad who is sort of the suburbanite dad. And he's not that sarcastic Jeff Winger character from Community. And so he doesn't, for what he has in the role, it's okay. He's fine in that. But the real star of this is Lulu Wilson, who plays Becky, because everyone else gets captured and she is in the woods outside the cabin and she kind of home alones her way to get revenge on these guys who have come in and are harming her family, because it's her dad and then her dad's girlfriend and her son. But of course, she's in the midst of an existential crisis anyways, partly because she's 13, and every 13-year-old, it sucks to be 13. You got emotions pulling you all this different way, and you got hormones, and you're going through puberty, and then her mom dies, and then her dad's talking about getting remarried, and she is just pissed off at the world, and then the Nazis show up, and so this is where she responds. And that's, I think one of the things is, you know, not to put too much, you know, intellectual veils on this, but this is a microcosm of what a 13-year-old feels like. When you're 13, not only is the world against you, but it just keeps throwing crap your way. And for her, she just has to defend herself, and she has what's, you know, amounts to a 13-year-old emotional outburst. But in the process, she's eviscerating Nazis. And this is a violent movie, okay? This is not something to watch with the kids. It's violent. It's graphic, very graphic at times. And some unpleasant things happen. And in general, I'm not a huge fan of the home invasion thriller, because you always have to have bad things happen to somebody to make it real enough for somebody to really react violently. You know, if people invade your home and they say, oh, we're just going to take something, thank you for this, you know, the watch, and then leave, that's a home invasion, but you really aren't seeking revenge. So these home invasion movies always have a section of revenge to them. You know, something like Us took it like farther and made it something more than just home invasion, or something like Your Next basically turns it into a Home Alone, a very violent Home Alone type movie. This one reminds me a little bit of that movie where Gabrielle Union plays the mom, and like she was married to either her husband or ex-husband, or his father was involved in the mob, and there are people coming to try and steal something in the house, and she was defending her family. That's kind of what this feels like, only this is much more visceral. And on a lot of ways, I really enjoyed it, and especially because I think it's carried by both Lulu Wilson and Kevin James. I think they do great jobs in their role. But like I said, there's unpleasant things that happen in the movie. It's violent, it's graphic. You got to know what you're getting into, but you know, for a home invasion thriller, that really has some teeth outside of just the original Home Invasion stuff. I think Becky is a good film, but you know what you're getting into. But still, I think it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. This week's spotlight is on Creepshow Season 1. The horror streaming service Shudder presents this anthology series inspired by the work of Stephen King and George A. Romero.
You know it's okay to be scared, right?
You gonna tell me what this is all about?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. You've killed before. You'll kill again.
There are things in the corners of this world.
Help me!
They'll drive you insane.
A new generation of horror.
One of the first R-rated movies I ever saw in the theater was Creepshow. I'd seen a couple before, but Creepshow was a big deal for me. I love the old EC horror comics. My dad actually has some. He still does. There still are some old EC horror comics, original printings of like Tales from the Crypt and the Vault of Horror in his house. There's and not many. It's maybe about a dozen or so, but the original printings. And they're in terrible condition because he was a kid when he got them. But I would read those when I was a kid, and I was a huge fan of that, and I liked Stephen King, and I love the idea of that sort of that comic book setup. And if you ever listen to me talking about my favorite comic book movies, Creepshow's one of them. And the Creepshow 2 is kind of garbage, and then Creepshow 3 really kind of hits the skids. But the Creepshow series really tries to recapture the spirit of Creepshow. They have the creep kind of bridging the stories, and each episode's about an hour long, and it has two stories to it. So they have that anthology feel. It's not just one-hour show, and I'm sure if they do season two and three, they might even stick three in there. It reminds me a little bit of the old Twilight Zone reboot in 1985 when that came out, because they put two or three stories into a half-hour or an hour episode, and that really helped make it feel like an anthology series. And you know, Creepshow Season 1, not every single episode is great. And in general, the production value is a little bit low. There was a real magic to the lighting that George Romero did with the first movie. He made it look very appropriate and shot well, but then he brought in some very hard lighting and some colors, almost like what you saw in the original Star Trek. There's like these like reds and greens and blues that don't exist in nature anywhere, but it gives a sense of the emotion and the feel to it. It's not as integrated as well as Creepshow. Creepshow the movie is much more smoothly put together. But these episodes are kind of cool. And I know they're done on a low budget. There's one where there's somebody goes through transformation. I'm not going to say what it was. But you can tell that they said, well, we can save some money on the practical effects by suddenly having this take place in a comic book, you know, frame by frame thing. And then all you have to do is get somebody to draw like five or six keyframes. And so I recognize that. And, you know, I'm like, hey, at least they tried and they did something creative to do it. You know, some stories are better than others, but it covers some of the old fashioned ones. It has a werewolf story in there. It has a monkey's paw story at one point. It has zombies and flesh eaters and monsters and ghouls. It has all the different things that you'd expect from an EC horror comic thing. And it's not just trying to base off of Creepshow, but it's trying to base off the old Tales from the Crypt and Vault of Horror. But it's not trying to do the HBO version of Tales from the Crypt, which was his own thing. They're simple stories, and some of them have some subtext to them, but sometimes it's not much. Sometimes it's just, hey, let's have some monster eat somebody's face off. And sometimes that's all you need. So I'm going to have to say that Creepshow Season 1 kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Other releases on DVD and Blu-ray on disc this week, of course, are Jaws in 4K and Parasite in 4K. There's also the new movie Robert the Bruce and Glengarry Glen Ross, so the collector's edition. And then finally, The Watchmen, also worthy of watching this week, the HBO limited series. And that's it for this week. I need to go, and when I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about The King of Staten Island, The Five Bloods, and Crossing Swords. Until then, have a fat time at the movie. Stay safe, everyone. God bless.